Good evening, one and all. A Wednesday, very hot, and then a thunderstorm with floods here in Connecticut. But it's another Wednesday, and it's me, Barry, with another book and a chat. Well, one of the things we get on the show is we say that when people write about an illnesses or abuse or something like that, if you put it into a fictional novel, what they're writing about seems to appeal to people, or people put themselves in the position of the person in the story. So in doing so, they can perhaps see their own life being reflected in that fictional novel, and thus take the information in more in a lot more easy format. Well, my guest today, he's done that, but with like a self-help thing. It's a fictional sort of advice, if you like, which I think's a great way of putting it, because people, again, can put themselves into the position of the person in the novel, and thus in their own life, and work their own life into it. But we better find out a bit more from my guest, because on the show today, I have the one and only Rubal Chandy. Hi, Rubal, how you doing?
Very good, Barry. How are you?
Not bad, not bad. People know I'm recovering from back surgery, but it's a better day today, and every day's a bit better, so that's the important thing. The thing about your book is, I mean, obviously, the sort of anxiety is basically, what can I say, psychological fear is the main form of anxiety. And within your novel, I believe that's one of the things that you start off and working through that, you know, to stop the anxiety, to stop the, shall I end it all, and all that sort of stuff. Where did that idea come from to put it into a novel?
The idea came to me actually in 2014, end of 2014, beginning of 2015. And I have been helping many people who went through major traumas that stopped them from growing their career or their business to the next level. And they were stuck in a place. And while I worked with them, I realized that so many people are getting this major benefit and major breakthrough in their life. And I wanted to expand it to a different level where masses, I mean, I cannot meet with everybody, so I wanted to find a way for masses to read the content of what I'm sharing with the world, and the way that I saw, which is beautiful and simple enough, was to write a simple story, very simple story, even a 12-year-old can understand, and through that story, I'm teaching how to break through challenges and convert your biggest challenges to your biggest opportunity, so you could expand your business and your career.
Because you know, fear is one of the major things, isn't it? I mean, people don't take that extra step because it's a step into the unknown. You know, what's going to happen? What's going to happen, you know, in some cases, you know, with my family? What happens if it all falls through? That's a big step, that first step, because of the fear part.
It is a big step and a small step too. If you're able to see yourself bigger than your fear, because fear has two dimensions. One is there is physical fear, because you need to protect yourself. A lion is right in front of you. You need to run. Mm-hmm. You know, you cannot imagine that, oh, I'm stronger than lion. It's not going to change the situation. Lion is going to get his food and leave. Right. So the next option is the psychological fear. Psychological fear is made-up fear. Some of this fear is not even your fear. You're borrowing. Because imagine there is a bank, like you have Reserve Bank here in the U.S., like Federal Reserve, and every bank can borrow a lot of money right now, basically for a very small interest rate from the banks, right, from the Federal Reserve. Same like that, you could actually borrow fear from the universe, which is what we habitually do. Because many of the fears that we have, the psychological fears that we have, it's borrowed from our ancestors, from our parents, from our culture, from our society. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. No, I totally agree, because, you know, it's like, you know, oh, crikey, you know, what will my family think of me that I'm sort of branching out on my own or something like that? It's like if you're in a relationship and it's not working, you know, or and that, you know, a lot of people stay in a relationship because of the fear of what family and friends would think. Rather, and so they stay in something that doesn't work. And same within business. You know, you're scared to go out on your own because, you know, well, yeah, my father has been in his job for 30 years, et cetera, et cetera. You have that fear of what people are going to think of you.
That is the fear of rejection. You don't want to be rejected by the society. And we built those fears to protect ourselves. Because, for example, as a culture, as a species, in order for us to survive, we needed to have a mechanism where we report back to the tribe, like, you know, from 4 million years ago. And in order for us to have accountability, we needed to install fear in ourselves in order for us to protect ourselves. Because we didn't want the youngsters will run away and being eaten by a tiger or an alligator. So we told them, don't go away. Listen, come back. You know, if you are not listening to us, we're going to reject you. So we taught and learned that we need to be rejected if you don't do certain things that society don't accept.
Well, you've gone through this in your book 90 Days to Life. Can you sort of give us a rundown of what the book's about?
90 Days to Life is about managing your psychological fear so you could grow your business and your career to the next level. Because oftentimes, people try to focus on the shallow. Why am I not getting promoted? Why is my business not growing to the next level? Fundamentally, it's not the techniques. It's not another skill that you need. What we need is a fundamental renovation of our own mind. So we learn how to manage fear and ask for promotions, ask for growing in your business. So I'm teaching strategies and tools that will help people break through their biggest fears, their biggest weaknesses, and convert that into their greatest opportunity.
In 90 Days to Life, the main characters are a woman who basically is just on the verge of committing suicide. Was it intentionally that it was a woman, the main character, or is it just how the character sort of came to you?
The character came to me as a woman, because 80% of the women people that I helped over the years are women. So I could, this is what I know, this has been my experience. The other character is a coach. So since I am a man writing the book, I thought it would be beautiful to have a man teaching a woman. And if I was a woman, I would have written a woman teaching a man, you know.
So the book basically tells of this woman, this woman who we said, she's reached the end, she's just about to sort of take that step, basically commit suicide. And somebody gives her, 90 days that is going to improve her life? Is that what the theme is?
Yes. So she is about to commit suicide. So the importance is not for the suicide. There are some people who might be listening to this and who are at a point where they feel hopeless.
Yeah.
And if that's the case, this is totally relevant for you. But if not, and if you're having an okay life, but you are in some level, you're giving up on some part of your life. Like it could be your health, it could be your finances, it could be your relationship. So you might be ready to give up on that part. That is a part that you would use to move to the next level. In this particular case, Lindsay was about to commit suicide and she meets with a person who she agrees on a contract with him that she would postpone. We are good at postponing stuff, right?
Yeah.
So she says she will postpone her killing herself for 90 days to learn how to grow her business to the next level and build the relationship that she wants. That's what the initial premise of the story.
And as I said, I think the idea of being a fictional self-help book, I guess is what it is. I think that's a great idea because there's a simple story, and as you said, anybody could understand the story, but it allows people to, it's not like the dry step one, step two, step three, there's characters and you put yourself in the form of those characters and you convert your life to what those characters are having their lives. And I think that makes it a lot more understandable to people. Is that what you found so far?
Yes, and there are people who read the book multiple times to get deeper into it. I have people who write back to me and say, I read it for the third time and I'm learning even more the third time. So it's fun for them to read. And more importantly, Barry, one thing that I realize in my work is that when we tell them a story, the logical brain, the mind that is stopping us from growing to the next level, is shut off. It is actually willing to listen because the story goes to the heart directly.
Yep.
Right? So when you're listening to a story, you forget that you're learning. And the moment you forget that you're learning, the defenses are down. Once the defenses are down, we actually learn.
Totally agree. And as I said, yeah, we've had lots of people who've written books about illnesses and abuse of various types and stuff like that. And the one that it's basically written into a novel, the people take it on board. They from what, you know, exactly what you said, their defenses are down. They're reading something that they can put themselves in the picture rather than, you know, well, this is about somebody else. And I think that's a great way of putting something like this, and it's the first such thing that I've heard, and I think it's a great idea. What's the you know, when people have finished reading it, and like you said, I think this is great, and I know other sort of books like this, you know, that you go back and you read it again, and then you pick something else up, and you read it again, and you pick something else up. What's the main message you want people to come away after they've read 90 Days to Life?
The main message, Barry, from the book is simple. The fundamental reason why, whatever level we are stuck in terms of income or opportunity or relationship or health, the fundamental reason why we are stuck whether it is a small problem or a big challenge is because of psychological fear. And I'm giving a step-by-step methodology that we could use to get out of this psychological fear and be a child again. And once you become a child again, then you're happy for no reason. And that's my invitation from the book.
Do you, I mean, you have the anxiety, you have the concern, the worry. You can take that and put it into a positive mode, can't you?
You can, as long as you are able to control your thoughts. Oftentimes what happens is, oftentimes what happens is the thought, the mind, and I need to define mind a little bit here because it's a very, you know, abstract concept. Like mind, if you consider mind as a process that controls the flow of information that is coming into you and coming out of you, then that mind that we built is enslaving us. So which means thoughts are going on the speed of light, and then we are just following it. But you need to become the master. Once you become the master of your thoughts, once you become the master of your mind, then mind becomes the best tool ever.
Because you get, you know, the mind sort of being there, but you get these things, what, gut feelings, you know, that people have. It's not something you can teach people, but is that a case of then that's actually sort of their mind trying to tell them stuff? Rather than, you know, I don't know, outside the box, I guess, as much as anything else.
Yeah, so what you're saying is the difference between mind and the gut feeling.
Yes, yes.
Right, so mind is a conditioned machine, that is a prediction machine. Because I failed in the past, then I should fail in the future. Fail in the present too, right? Mm-hmm. Because this trauma happened to me in the past, then trauma will happen now. And then trauma needs to happen in the future because that's all the mind knows. Gut feeling is different. Gut feeling is that, so basically we have a tiny brain in front of our gut. It's called gut brain. It's based on a latest research from Stanford. We have something called gut brain in front of our stomach.
Okay.
So this brain, this tiny brain, which has 100 million neurons, this tiny brain is capable of assessing what is happening in the environment because that brain has like very sensitive because, for example, when you eat food, this is why, you know, we have food addiction. This is one of the reasons why we have food addiction, because the moment you eat food, that part of the brain feels good. And it says to the body, oh, you could feel good. No matter what happened in the past, we don't need to deal with that because we have food right now. the bottom line, answering your question, is that your gut feeling is a scientific process that is outside of your mind. So of the mind definition that I gave you, because of that, you could actually feel the other person and then say, oh, that situation, and say, withdraw from the situation or get into the situation. That gut feeling is from a deeper part of you.
Okay. I understand. It's first I've ever heard about the gut brain before, but it makes a lot of sense, I tell you. In the book, in your book, this 90 Days to Life, there are sort of terms that come up in the book. What does living in Ananda mean?
Living in Ananda means, it's very simple, being in a state of, Ananda is a Sanskrit word, which means absolute bliss. And what happens is, when we take out all this anxiety, all this fear from us, and we cannot take out all the fear, that's why we call ourselves fearless, not fear-free. Nobody becomes fear-free. When we become fearless, as in very less fear in us, then what we come back, we all come back to joy. And we all know this. We all have joy within us. But what happened was we forgot. When we were a child, when we were 6 months old or 9 months old, you cried. You cried. For what? For food. You didn't cry because you didn't have $1 million or you didn't have a Ferrari.
Right.
You cried because you didn't have food or you needed to, you needed to use the bathroom. That's it. Right. So for the physical things, we were like maybe sad or mad. But other than that, we created depression or anxiety and everything else. But once we unlearned these things, we could come back to being that state of mind where, just like a child, we could experience bliss, because that's what we truly are. And that's where we could come back. That's what living in Ananda
is. Okay. Because basically, I think you've got it down to sort of three steps within business, within life, within any sort of three-step process. What are those main three steps?
Three-step process to double
your productivity, say.
Absolutely. Yeah. So what happens is, getting into the productivity, once you are in the state of Ananda, then naturally you start to produce more. Why? Because your emotions are stopping you from getting into the next level. So in order for you to produce one, first step is, even before these three steps, we need to reach that state of mind. We need to reach that Ananda. Once you reach that point, then our goal is to get your mind to be free. So the first step that you do is capture, which means if you have an idea, if you have an insight, if you have something that you need to do tomorrow, day after tomorrow, write it down in a piece of paper or use a tool to capture it somewhere. That is the first step of productivity. And even if you don't do it, if you write it down, then it's outside of your head. Immediately, you feel a sense of relief. The second step is to clarify. Clarifying is very simple. And there are detailed steps that, including flowcharts and everything that I'm explaining how to do this. But in simple terms, basically, is this important? Is this important enough for my life? How do you determine that? You determine that if you're a business owner or a professional, you have two things: high profit activities, high impact activities. So if you're an employee, high profit means, you know, you would make sure that you get your paycheck. For a business owner, high profit means the things that bring in revenue or profit, right? So those are the high profit activities. The next one would be high impact activities. Like 50 years from now, like, did you spend enough time with your children?
Yeah.
Did you spend enough time with your wife, your family, your friends, or going on a vacation, right? So those are the only two things that you would focus on: high profit, high impact. So that's what clarifying is. Once you find out everything else that is garbage, throw it away and focus on those two things. And the third step is complete. Complete the things that you want to do. You already captured it, you already clarified and filtered the most impactful and the most profitable, and then go ahead and do it. Those are the three steps: capture, clarify, complete.
Now, I know, you know, we're talking business and stuff like that, but that's also life as well. If you can base your life around that, your family, etc., around that, and, you know, I think those three steps would help you, help a person with that as well.
Exactly. So, for example, you need to take your son for your tennis camp.
Yep.
Okay, so what do you need to do? The thing comes to your head. So you capture that in a piece of paper, or I'm detailing so many tools that you could use inside the book. You could use a tool and then write it down. Let's use the writing example and write it down in a piece of paper. And, you know, is it really important? Yes, it is really important. Okay, good. So what is the next step? The next step would be to find out where do you have a tennis club, right? Okay, so then complete it. Right, same
yep.
thing. But so what happens is, we, just like we discussed before, we are allowing our thought to run this entire business of life.
Mm.
Instead, we could be the CEO of our own life, become the CEO of our own life, and allow our thinking to be transferred into a paper, and then you evaluate and say, okay, is this important? Is this high impact? Is it high profit? High impact is life.
Mm.
High profit is money. Right, so you decide. So now you have the perfect life, work-life synergy.
Right. I know. I mean, in my own work environment, etc. One of the things, you know, like I've been off work for a couple of weeks now, and I know that when I go back to work, there's going to be about 1,000 emails waiting for me. I mean, are emails important, or are they just somebody else's to-do list?
Yeah. So emails, for the most part, 80%+ of the emails are to-do lists for other people. They are distractions.
Right.
So for emails, we could do the same thing. You know, there are basically very few things that you would be doing with an email, right? So let's say you have 2,000 emails. Let's run through this, if you allow me to. Like, you
sure.
have 2,000 emails, Barry. You go back to office. You scan through these 2,000 emails. The first thing that you do is go through that and say, you know what is not important?
Yep.
So just select all of them, archive them. Maybe in the future you might need that.
Yeah.
And then maybe out of 2,500, 2,300 would be like that, I believe.
Yep.
Because that's what I have experienced. Right. And then you have, let's say, another 300, 200 emails. In that 200, the next question is, can I do this? Can I do this in 3 minutes or less? And if it can be done in 3 minutes or less, there's no meaning in getting into a folder and doing it and managing it and stuff like that. Just do it right then. So go through each of the email, do it now, finish it. And if it cannot be done in 3 minutes, then you have two options. One, it is important for you, and can it be delegated? Can it
right.
be delegated to somebody else?
Yeah.
Right? So if it can be delegated to somebody, delegate it, mark it as important follow-up, and then delegate it. So let's say you have 100 of them that you could delegate, or 0 that you could delegate. That's still fine too. But if you have 100, delegate it and mark it as follow-up, and make sure that you follow up until you finish it. Everything else is most important outcome that you need to be working on. You have maybe another 100 emails that cannot be done in 3 minutes, that cannot be delegated. Now take on them and move it to a folder called important outcomes or important results,
yeah.
and then from their scheduled time to finish and get it done. How does
yeah.
that sound?
No, that's good. And I can totally understand and relate to a lot of that. And also, I mean, and this is something that you mentioned then that people forget sometimes, is they delegate it to people and then forget about it. They don't follow up on it. And I think that's something that people need to do within business, within, you know, oh, okay, I'll get that stuff for you, or you know, it'll be here next week. People forget about it and they don't follow up on it. And your business suffers because you haven't followed up on it. You haven't contacted the supplier to thank them for rushing the stuff through, or, you know, so that next time you do it, the person will be, oh, he was appreciative for the work I did last time, I'll do this for him again, sort of thing. And I think that sort of follow-up part within life, within business, is something that is forgotten sometimes.
Yeah, I was very famous in my organization when I used to work for a company before I went into my own business. Everybody around me, including the CEO, around everyone knew that if something is in Ruble's hand, it will never be forgotten. Because the moment I send that email to somebody asking them to do that, I mark it as important follow-up, and I have a folder there where I go and check every week and say, oh, what happened? What happened to this? And then even after like 2 years, like, what happened? What happened to this thing? So I would never, ever forget because I don't need to remember.
No, I that's great, and I appreciate that sort of thing myself. I get brought in on these things where some people, you go to these meetings and some people are scared to say anything. You know, you sit there through the meeting and they sit there, they don't say anything about it. You know, and as soon as they get outside, they're moaning and groaning about this, that, and the other. But for whatever reason, they're scared to bring that stuff up. Well, I was raised in an environment where if something needs to be said, you say it. When I came to America, I couldn't believe the difference in the meetings between the meetings in England and the meetings in America. And it's a similar sort of thing. It's like yourself, you know, people, if it was in your hands, they knew it was in a safe pair of hands and that it wouldn't be, the ball wouldn't be dropped. You were there and you would follow up on it. And I think that's great. And that's something in business and in life that needs to be done.
Yeah. Exactly, same with my children. Because I assign something to my children, then I mark it in a system that, hey, this is assigned to my son, my daughter, and then they would hear from me what happened after 1 week. What happened? I gave this to you. What happened? Do you have an update on this? Right. Mm-hmm. So, yes, follow up is very, very powerful because a lot of times, even if you don't think that you have direct reports under you, you have direct reports under you. Your children, right? Your family, your friends, your mother, your daughter. You know. Right. So, go ahead.
Time is beating us, but what I'm going to do now is hand the show over to you, Ruble, and have you tell everybody where people can find out more about your book, 90 Days to Life, and of course yourself and the whole process.
Yeah, so 90 Days to Life is available everywhere, and if the easiest place that is available is Amazon.com, you could go to Amazon.com and search for 90 Days to Life or search for Ruble Chandy, my name, and then you would find. And we have become an international bestseller in the first 3 weeks of releasing the book.
Wow, good stuff.
Canada, India. Yeah, thank you. Canada, India, and the U.S. And so it is available on Amazon. And if you would like to dive deep into the concept, then we have on my website, rublechandy.com/contest, C-O-N-T-E-S-T, contest. We have a contest going on where we would invite you to sign up with your information, basically I think name and email address, and then get into an opportunity to receive a 7-day Western Caribbean cruise. Oh. It's not with me to celebrate your own victory. So you can bring your spouse, your friend, girlfriend, boyfriend, anybody, significant other, and then you guys can go. So that will be drawn on September 30th. So you could participate on that. That is not the biggest deal. The biggest deal is I gave a 21-day training, a detailed training. This the extension of the book, the things that I could not cover in 90 Days to Life, I teach inside that curriculum. So you would get access to 21 days of training with me. There is no selling. I'm not trying to sell anything. This is a bonus thing that I'm giving, so people can learn from it.
Great. Well, Ruble, thank you so much for being a guest on the show. Fascinating insight, and I'm sure a lot of people, both in business and in life, no wonder it's a international bestseller already. I can fully appreciate what you're sharing with people and the advice and advantage that this can bring them. So thank you very much for being a guest on the show.
Thank you, Barry. It was great. It went really, really fast.
It did.
That's
indeed.
That's amazing.
Thank you. Well, there you go. My guest today, Ruble Chandy, R-U-B-L-E, Ruble Chandy, C-H-A-N-D-Y. And as you said, rublechandy.com is his website. And we've been discussing basically what he's got in his book, 90 Days to Life. Lots of interesting facts, lots of interesting things, lots of ways of looking at things that I'm sure would help a lot of people. And as you said, it's already sort of a, You know, bestseller, an international bestseller. Great stuff there. And, of course, if you go there, as you said, you stand a chance of winning a seven-day cruise. Yes, I know. Try it out. Look for rubalchandy.com. Well, that's it for now. I'll be back on Sunday with my music shows from 5 to 6. We have those with the days. And we're starting for the next 4 weeks. We're going to have decades. So the summer song for that date that year, what's called the summer song for that year. So we're starting with the 60s this week, and then we've got the 70s, 80s and 90s going up in the next 4 weeks. Interesting, some of the songs, you wouldn't believe they were classed as a song of summer. Well, that's that. And then, of course, from 6:30 to 7, we have 30 minutes of the British invasion, music that invaded America from England. Well, that's that. And I'll be back next Tuesday with a fresh guest on A Book of a Chat. So until then, we've just got one thing left to say. Don't forget.